afternoon, good evening, and good morning, Power Hour Nation, wherever, whenever you are connecting with us. It is the last day of the month, 11/30/2018. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the one and only Power Hour Radio Show. So glad to be with you. You're in the right place. Later on in our broadcast, Patrick Wood, you remember him, Technocracy Now, he's going to be on. He's going to join to talk about his new book, Technocracy, Hard Road to a World Order. Important interview. We'll get to him later. But right now, on the phone with us is becoming fast one of our really good friends, Daniel Estulin. His book, In the Shadows of a Presidency, all about the just war going on behind the scenes between Trump, deep state, Rockefeller, Rothschilds, whatever, industrialist, banker financing thing, fantastic book, In the Shadows of a Presidency. His website, english.danielestulin.com. Daniel, welcome back to the Power Hour.
It's wonderful to be back. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Well, we're glad to have you on a regular basis because things are moving so quickly. This is one of prime times of our life. We're going to get into the Mueller back and forth, indictment of Trump, releasing of documents. We're going to get to that, but let's start with the G20. Trump is scheduled to go to the G20 next week.
Said, there's just so much going on. Just, over the last 24 hours, Deutsche Bank was raided with all the stuff related to money laundering, drug trafficking, etc. Trump's tax attorney, his offices were raided. Laura Loomer handcuffed herself to, Twitter's head office and became, for one day, the most famous person in the world. Angela Merkel, Germany's chancellor, her airplane was forced to land, and she had to take a commercial flight from Madrid, Spain, to the G20 meeting. Mohammed bin Salman, the guy allegedly behind the assassination and dismemberment of Khashoggi, everybody was at the G20 meeting. Who is he going to shake hands with? There he is, high-fiving, Putin, talking to Macri, the president of Argentina and the host of the meeting. So all that stuff is going on while all this other stuff, financial collapse, the Toronto Raptors beating the Golden State Warriors yesterday. It's not important, but it is if you're in Toronto. The Trump thing, the stuff in Europe, the G7, the European Union in a state of collapse, Italy going at it with the European Union, Greece is going at it, Spain is, in the midst of a civil war with the secessionist province of Catalonia. There's stuff going in England with Brexit. I mean, it doesn't matter where you look. We are looking at the collapse of the global financial order. And what happened at the G20, what is happening, because today is the first day, is indicative of all the stuff we've been talking about. Because the world economy is on the brink of collapse. Talked about this before. The size of the economic problem is of such magnitude, Daniel, that it simply cannot be resolved through government intervention. You're looking at the financial system facing $4 quadrillion bubble of everything bubble. That's 415 zeros, in case people are wondering. The global debt, about $230 trillion, which is about 325% of the world's gross domestic product, not to mention that $10 trillion. I think it's actually a bit more now. $10 trillion of global debt, that's bonds, securities, derivatives, they're negotiated and traded at negative interest rates. We've never seen this kind of stuff before. And also, if you're looking at the immediate triggers of the next financial crisis, which are some of the things that, they're discussing at the G20 meeting as we speak, is sovereign debt. The riskiest asset today is sovereign bonds at abnormally low yield, compressed by central bank policies. With $6.5 trillion in negative yielding bonds, the nominal and real losses in pension funds will likely be added to the losses in other asset classes. You want to talk about pension funds? That's $3 trillion underfunded. That's what we're looking at. Another issue on the G20 agenda is a question they're asking all the delegates. What will the next financial look like? I think nothing like the last one in 2008. Contagion is the word, being passed around. It's much more difficult because there have been some lessons learned from the Lehman Brothers. There are stronger mechanisms to avoid a widespread domino effect. In the banking system, the G20 leaders believe when the biggest bubble is sovereign debt, the crisis we faced is not one of the massive financial market losses and real economy contagion, but a slow fall in asset prices, as we're seeing, and also global stagnation. And another key issue, again, the G20 is an important meeting because we discussed this, and I talk about it at length in my book. In 2011, the bankers and the financiers at the G20 meeting tried to take the issue of global currency out of U.S. hands and into the hands of what was expected to become the central bank of central banks, called the Bank of International Settlement. We discussed the, you know, the Dominique Strauss-Kahn affair, the president of International Monetary Fund. He was caught in a New York hotel with a woman of questionable character. Again, these kinds of things are discussed at the G20 meeting. It remains to be seen what's going to happen at this year's meeting, because, again, what they need, and everybody is acutely aware of it, is they need a new economic model, because the old model, Bretton Woods economic model, created and put together back in 1944 by the winners of World War II, is now dead because we reached the limits of growth, and there's no such thing as infinite growth on a finite planet. So, again, the problem is they need to find a model, because the present one is collapsing everywhere on the planet, which is why we're seeing in every nook and corner of the galaxy, you know, wars and infighting taking place, because, again, there's less and less for to divide amongst all these different groups. And whether it was before,
okay,
yeah, the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds, et cetera, dividing it up between themselves, now there's not enough, and that's why we have what we have.
Let me interject here with a question about the G20. We don't know how it's going to happen. Everybody's aware of this. It's the underlying, probably, agenda of the whole meeting, really. What are some possible new economic models that could come out of this? What are some possible things
we can look for? Well, at the G20 meeting, they're not going to come out with any economic model. But there are several ideas being bandied around, and they have been, since the 2001 9/11. One of this, because, again, the bankers, financiers realized, in the year 2000, with the first collapse, with the dot-com collapse, is that their model of infinite expansion was dead. It was just a matter of time. So one of the options that they've been looking at for a long time is regionalizing of world economies, separating the entire world into regional groups, and each group is going to have its own currency. And one group, for example, will be Canada, the United States, parts of Mexico, and then maybe Australia and New Zealand, because you need a minimum population base of about 300 million people to make an economic area work, and about between 300 and 500 million people. So that would be one area. Another area would be the rest of Mexico and Latin America, be it peso, whatever they're going to call it. Then the European group with Paris-Berlin axis. China would be a separate entity. India, because of their size, would be a separate entity. Russia would be divided basically in half by the Ural Mountains. That's why, I don't know if you've been paying attention, it's not the kind of stuff you see in American media because they're too busy, you know, talking about Trump and Mueller's investigation and everything else. But what actually, one of the key issues at the Valdai Economic Forum, which is a very important forum, it's like a Davos, but in Russia, they've been discussing actually having Russia with two capital cities. One will be Moscow, and the second will be in the Far East, Vladivostok. And there's a reason for that, is that if you're going to have regional economies and you're going to divide countries into regions, not countries, not nation states, with borders, currencies, constitutions, etc., that would disappear. Then Russia would need two capital cities, because if you divide Russia by the Ural Mountains, separating natural separation east from west, Moscow will be west, and Vladivostok, which is, you know, right over there at the end of the world where the dinosaurs and, you know, and the big fish fly and swim, right next to Japan. That's where you would have the Far East, Russian capital of the Far Eastern, New Russia, let's call it that way. And then that would leave England with the Arab countries to form their own economic region with a new currency, which probably would be a golden dinar. All that stuff is on the table, okay? Another idea, which also has been discussed, is Trump would go his own way, you know, making America great again, shutting the door on the rest of the world, which is, again, what the banking financiers are so afraid of, because that would dismantle the entire financial structure. And China would go its way, which is one of the things, one of the reasons we're seeing this supposed fight between the Chinese and the Americans. And again, don't believe it. It's like WWF wrestling. It's not real. Back in 1979, Jimmy Carter, the peanut salesman, and the and Deng Xiaoping, they signed a secret agreement for 20 years, renewable 20 more years, you know, by the Clinton administration, and then 2 more years, till the year 2021, where basically there will be no of any kind hostilities between these two nations. So what we're seeing between China and the United States is basically a preamble to each going its own way. America would make America great again, shutting down the door in the United States, and China would go to China with Southeast Asia as part of its Silk Road Initiative, which is territorial expansion beyond their territories, based on physical gold and monetary and paper yuan. That'll be another separation. So these are basically the two ideas we're looking at right now.
Now, all right, let me interject with America. We've seen the globalists basically pick our country apart, or traitors have sold our country apart. What you just said about shutting the doors, American isolationism, that doesn't sound too bad considering the alternative. Which one do you think will happen?
All the stuff with Donald Trump and the liberal banking financier, globalist, parasitical elite based in Wall Street, going after Donald Trump. Because, again, when you're looking at in politics, the fight is always for power. People who don't understand how politics works think it's about money. It's not about money, because once you're president, they will bring you money on their knees and give it to you while they kiss your feet. I think it's obvious. It's always about power. And what basically happened in 2016, and again, I explained it in my book in the first chapter, that we knew back in 2014, 7 months before Trump even presented himself as a possible candidate, that Trump would win the presidency on someone like Donald Trump, because we simply realized by projecting the political climate into the future that no liberal financier would be allowed to get anywhere near the White House, because they have destroyed, they literally destroyed the world economic order, and the alternative elite, for the first time since basically 1944, had their chance to present and actually win the White House by presenting their candidates, and they presented two candidates. They had Donald Trump as right-wing conservative and Bernie Sanders as left-leaning liberal, and I think Bernie Sanders would have beaten Trump, but it had not been for all the shenanigans in the Democratic Party with Hillary Clinton, but because she won and not Bernie Sanders, Trump ended up beating her. So the isolationist, or if you want to call them industrialists, they beat the liberal financiers for the White House. And ever since, in 2016, we've seen this fight to the death, because, again, we're looking at two completely different models, something that there's simply absolutely no way that these two groups could ever agree on.
Hold that thought. On the other side, then, that leads us right into the Mueller investigation. Trump is sitting on supposedly radioactive information. We'll talk about that and more. On the other side, Daniel Estlin, English.DanielEstlin.com, in the shadows of a presidency. If you ever look at the world and think, what's really going on is not what they're showing me. Well, that's what this book is. That's what Daniel Estlin represents. Bilderberg, of course, he's exposed. In the Shadows of a Presidency, excellent book. His website, English.DanielEstlin.com. He's got to go here. We got about 5 minutes. Question. We see rumors Mueller may be indicting Trump all along. He was a target, we think. And we also see on the other side, Trump may be releasing the Hillary Clinton emails, maybe releasing the voter fraud, the whole deal. It's like they're both on both sides. What are we seeing? What will happen in Daniel's mind?
Again, we don't know what Mueller has, but what we've seen so far, for the past couple of years, all that stuff related to Trump, is none of it is impeachable. I mean, you can push it any way you want, but Trump controls the Senate, and the people in the Senate today are not the same people who ran the Senate in after the 2016 elections, meaning that, Trump today, Republican Party is his party, and the people in the Senate and the House, they're his people, and they're going to go, to bat for him, and they're going to go out of their way to make sure nothing happens to him, because, again, Trump is not a person. He is a project of an alternative group of people. To put it differently, Trump's plans are an attempt to save the United States economy at the expense of banks and financial system itself. While Clinton, or whoever is, replacing her, would have sought to bail out the banks at the expense of the U.S. economy and an increasing impoverishment of its citizens. This is what it's all about. So it would be naive to think that these two groups of people can reach consensus. It's a fight to the death. So what we're seeing again, plans by Trump and Clinton, or rather by the forces behind them, they're mutually exclusive. So if Trump goes through with his plan, it would wipe out those elite groups that stand behind Clinton, Wall Street, hedge funds, speculative financial interests, and they would remain alive, although things would happen, but would lose the resources they previously had. Clinton's plan would endanger those forces, the U.S. economy's real sector, that brought Donald Trump to power. Again, it's like in the movie The Highlander, there's only one that will survive. So, again, so it's possible that Mueller's going to have his indictment. But Trump, as the president of the United States, has a lot of tools at his disposal and a lot of information where we know that the Democrats and also the Republicans who've, you know, been behind the Democratic campaign to get rid of Donald Trump have done a lot of illegal things. And this stuff can't come out because, again, we are in the middle of the Civil War in the United States. Trump has demonstrated in the past 2 years that he's a very good street fighter, much better than Bernie Sanders would ever have been. Of course, Bernie Sanders wouldn't have had to deal with all the stuff that's happening around him. But needless to say, what we're seeing today is part of this global economic collapse. And everything we're seeing, Trump, Mueller, Clinton, you know, the stuff going at the G20, the Brexit, it doesn't matter where you stick your finger on the map, something is going on. Why? Because the backdrop to everything we're seeing and the reason for it is an economic collapse of a model that's no longer sustainable. So needless to say, the liberal banking financiers, who are these liberal financiers? This is Wall Street. This is the Washington bureaucracy. These are the intelligence agencies, Hollywood, Silicon Valley, the Soros, the Rockefellers, the military-industrial complex, you know, the mainstream media. This group of people, the liberal banking financiers, speculators, parasites, who control today still a large part of America's economy, they will do everything in their power to get rid of Trump. Because if Trump ends up winning this war, and I think he will end up winning, and I'm absolutely convinced he's going to win in 2020, then he will totally destroy the liberal order as he's doing right now, one little, you know, brick or drop at a time. So I think Trump will win. We don't know what's in the Mueller's indictment, but what we do know is the reason this whole thing is, you know, the modus operandi is, again, from a conceptual intelligence level. The economic model is collapsing. The liberals lost. The liberals, again, they're not Democrats or Republicans. It's part of a model which is based on infinite growth and Bretton's model, which doesn't work anymore, which means they're going to go out of the way. They will do anything they can to get back the White House. But what they don't understand is that even if they do get the White House back, they can't save the world economy because the model that the world economy is based on is dead, which means they don't have the language, the tools, or the know-how to save it. Because since 1944, that's three generations, Daniel. Every, you know, businessman, every, you know, business school, think tank, foundation, secret societies, private organizations, they've all learned the language of this Bretton's model. And now that it's dead, they have no alternative to create a new model. We in Russia do. Okay. And Putin offered Trump an opportunity to work together and create an institute and write a new economic model to dismantle the liberal world order.
We got about 10 seconds, 10, 15 seconds. It's great to be with you. Give us some hope. Leave us with some hope. Are we going to get through this? Yes,
we're
no?
We're going to get through this because, again, Trump is untouchable. They can't kill him because the people behind Trump are far more powerful than anything on any other side of the world. Kennedy had nothing behind. He had no backup. Trump is supported by people far more powerful than the Clinton crowd.
Daniel, it's such a pleasure to be with you. God bless. We look forward to coming on again. And you and your family have a great weekend, my friend.
Thank you. Take care.